This movement says its fighters have captured more Israeli troops and have taken them to the Gaza Strip as Operation Al-Aqsa Flood continues. The leader of the Islamic Jihad says Palestinian fighters humiliated Israel in their ongoing operation, and the only way for the regime to cut its losses is to admit defeat. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has slammed as unacceptable the Western support for Israel and its aggression on the Gaza Strip. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says its fighters have captured more Israeli soldiers on the second day of their anti-Israeli operations. Spokesperson for the Al-Qassam Brigade, the military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, said on Sunday that a new group of Israeli captives had been taken to Gaza. Abu Beda added that Israeli troops killed some of the soldiers captured by Palestinian fighters. According to the spokesman, Palestinian fighters recorded video footage of the Israeli killing of its own soldiers. He added that Palestinian fighters withdrew safely from the Urim base, which is home to the Israeli regime's intelligence unit 8200, after killing a large number of enemy forces. On Saturday, Hamas launched a large-scale operation with a heavy barrage of rockets in response to Israel's desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and increased settler violence. Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip have killed over 490 Palestinians and injured more than 2,700 others since Saturday. The UN says more than 123,000 people have been displaced in Gaza since the outbreak of the conflict. This comes as Hamas resistance movement says its fighters captured more Israeli soldiers on the second day of the Al-Aqsa Flood operation. That's an ongoing offensive by Gaza-based resistance movements against Israel. They have targeted Israeli cities, including Tel Aviv, with thousands of missiles. Resistance fighters have also crossed the Gaza barrier fence into Israeli-occupied territories and seized control of a vast part of the areas near the barrier. The unprecedented offensive has left at least 750 Israelis dead and nearly 2,400 injured. Meanwhile, the leader of the Gaza-based resistance movement, Islamic Jihad, says the only way for Israel to cut its losses is to admit defeat and to give in to Palestinian demands. In a televised address, Ziad al-Nakhala said resistance fighters are holding dozens of Israelis, including 30 by the Islamic Jihad alone. He said they will only be released if Israel frees all Palestinian prisoners. Nakhala said the Israeli army is weaker than many believe, and Palestinian resistance fighters humiliated it during Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. He added that Israel cannot break the will of the Palestinian fighters now by destroying their homes and killing civilians. The Islamic Jihad chief stressed that these crimes would instead add to Palestinians' strength and resolve. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the U.S.'s plan to provide more military aid to Israel amounts to aggression against Palestinians. The reaction followed Washington's announcement that it would deploy aircraft carriers and warplanes to support the Israeli regime. The U.S. President Joe Biden said fresh military aid is on its way to Israel after attacks by Palestinian fighters. In a phone conversation with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Biden said Washington was ready to offer all appropriate means of support to Israel. Biden also warned any other party hostile to Israel is against seeking advantage in the current situation. The Palestinian mission to the UN says Israel needs to change course amid the regime's onslaught on the Gaza Strip.
Regrettably, history for some media and politicians start when Israelis are killed. Our people have endured one deadly year after another. We came to the Security Council month after month, warning of the consequences of Israeli impunity and international inaction. This is not a time to let Israel double down on its terrible choices. This is a time to tell Israel it needs to change course, that there is a path to peace where neither Palestinians nor Israelis are killed. It is time for an immediate end to the violence and the bloodshed, and it is time to end this blockade and to open a political horizon. We chose the peaceful path to achieve our rights, but Israel continued using blunt force against Palestinian lives and Palestinian rights. Israel cannot wage a full-scale war on a nation, its people, its land, its holy sites, and expect peace in exchange. We have been calling for a different rationale, a different approach. Justice, not vengeance. Freedom, not occupation. Peace, not war. Our calls should be heeded. The alternative is playing out under our very eyes. You cannot stand for peace if you do not stand up to occupation. Do it because it is the right thing to do, morally, legally, politically, and because it will save lives. Peace will save lives because it is the only way forward.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has slammed as unacceptable the Western support for Israel and its aggression on the Gaza Strip.
Unfortunately, we're still witnessing that there are certain parties that have always been supportive of daily crimes perpetrated by the Zionist regime committed against the Palestinian people. They are still attempting to kind of change the positions of the oppressor and the oppressed. And regardless of the infringement of 75 years infringement of the Palestinians' rights by a usurper regime, and without taking heed of all these crimes committed in the decades before by the Zionist regime against the Palestinian people. So in the recent developments, they are still standing by the side of the oppressor and go to its support against the Palestinian nation.
Kanani said in his weekly presser that the U.S. and some European governments are resorting to psychological warfare against Palestinians and seek to pose the oppressor as the oppressed. He added that Western governments have closed their eyes to Israeli crimes and brutalities. Kanani also hailed the substantial global support for Palestinians and their resistance, including by Muslim countries. He called on Muslim nations to step up their political and spiritual support. Kanani also called for an emergency meeting of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation over the Gaza developments. People have marched in several cities across the U.S. in support of Palestine. The protesters say Palestinians have the right to resist in the face of Israeli crimes.
Yeah, well, we're here as part of the Palestinian diaspora, and we want to show the world that when Palestine rises up in resistance, the diaspora rises with it. You know, we are an interconnected movement, and, you know, we are here to show solidarity with our people in Palestine and to say that Palestinians have a right to resist. They have a right to resist under international law their occupation. And we've been suffering for 75 years at the hands of a regime that is, you know, founded on ethnic cleansing, founded on violence, and has been, you know, erasing and displacing our people for decades now.
Day in and day out, Palestinians are harassed by Israeli settlers. Not just the government. It's on all fronts, on all forms of life, of living. Palestinians day in and day out are facing aggression, are facing threats to their livelihood.
Breaking news that there was a huge explosion in Tel Aviv that was just reported to us, and we have based that on a witness who has said this explosion, confirming it, and the anti-rocket sirens are now sounding in Al-Quds. So it's now a common place for these resistance missiles to reach far into the occupied territories, in this case, for it to have reached Tel Aviv. It puts into question, once again, the efficiency of the Iron Dome missile system, which, again, it has failed on many fronts. But here, a witness saying that there's a huge explosion that has rocked Tel Aviv, and there's anti-rocket sirens as a result to be sounding in Al-Quds. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh says Palestinian resistance against the Israeli regime has gained momentum since the first Intifada in the year 2000.
And of course, the Palestinian resistance gained momentum after the liberation in Lebanon in 2000, where we saw the first Intifada, the glorious Intifada that began then, and it began also in the West Bank. We saw the resistance also gaining momentum in Gaza. That continued, and that was very significant for the people of Lebanon, since, as you know, it is not just supportive of the Palestinian cause. We have over 500,000 Palestinian refugees living more than 12 Palestinian refugee camps. This is an issue which is very significant for the Lebanese in itself. It would solve a lot of problems. As you know, we did have internal clashes in one of the camps. We had another camp that was used as a harbor for a safe haven for some of the Takfiri terrorists as well, where they used to prepare bomb-laden cars. They used it to launch operations against the Lebanese army and against other resistance factions, whether Palestinian or Lebanese.
Okay, let's actually cross on over to Ashraf Shannon in Gaza City to tell us what's happening. Ashraf, what do you have for us?
Well, Kaveh, Israeli fighter jets continue to pound the Gaza Strip, and Palestinian resistance groups retaliate by firing fresh volleys of rocket towards the Israeli regime, including Tel Aviv, and the settlements around the Gaza Strip. Earlier today, we saw the loud explosion and heavy smoke billowing near the Gaza refugee camp. What happened there is that Israeli fighter jet bombed the biggest mosque in the Palestinian refugee camp of Al-Shati, completely destroying the mosque and causing heavy damage in surrounding areas. I learned right now that paramedics are removing bodies of victims from areas around the mosque. The heavy smoke we saw is as a result from the explosion of the power generator, the mosque power generator, and also the tank that contains diesel fuel for the power generator. This is what made us think before, made me think before that it was a gas station because of the color of that smoke that was coming from the area. We entered the third day of this round of fighting against the Israeli regime by resistance factions. Yesterday, for the first time, the Israeli Prime Minister said that this will be the first war on Gaza, according to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli regime and all former prime ministers never called their military operations against Gaza, never dubbed them as wars. This is the first time that he says it's the first war on Gaza. Every war we had against the Gaza Strip since 2008, the Israeli regime dubbed them as operation this and operation that, and never said war. But this is the first time that the Israeli regime calls it a war. So I believe Israel is trying to show the Palestinians that their losses will be much higher. Every war Israel launched in Gaza caused a lot of death and destruction. Whether 2008, 2012, 2014, or 2021, and already over 500 Palestinians have been killed in the Gaza Strip as a result of ongoing Israeli bombardment of civilian infrastructure, and homes. According to the Ministry of Interior in Gaza, Israel has committed 15 massacres since Saturday, 50 massacres targeting entire families, killing entire families, including women and children. The fighting continues also in the east of the Gaza Strip, with the Israeli regime saying that there are still Palestinian resistance fighters within the Israeli settlements around Gaza. They've called on all settlers to be evacuated from Israeli settlements around Gaza. And as I said yesterday, Israel has deployed dozens of tanks. The numbers has risen, the number of tanks deployed to the areas in the east and the north of Gaza is currently in the hundreds, as Israel has called on some 300 army reservists to join the active forces in Benjamin Netanyahu's war against the civilians in Gaza. The Israeli regime is not fighting the resistance fighters inside the Gaza Strip. They're fighting against the civilian population. Their first aggression was to cut electricity supplies to the Gaza Strip, and also to shut down the crossings, causing already shortages in foods and supplies and cooking gas in this blockaded territory. Israel has always used the civilian population in Gaza as a protective shield to shield the soldiers from the attacks of Palestinian resistance fighters. I remember in 2008 when Israeli soldiers who during the ground invasion in the area of Tal Hawa in Gaza, they used children as protective shields to protect them from the attacks of resistance fighters. So as I said, the resistance fighters in Gaza, mainly Hamas's military wing, the Zin Qassam brigades, on Saturday launched some 5,000 rockets against the Israeli regime, and also their forces entered the, some around 14 settlements, I believe, east of the Gaza Strip, killing Israeli soldiers and policemen, and also capturing soldiers and bringing them back to Gaza. They also captured Israeli military equipment and brought them to Gaza as well. They even brought with them the dead bodies of Israeli soldiers who were killed in the fighting. A lot of Palestinian families are pinning their hope on those captured Israeli soldiers and settlers to help release more than 5,000 Palestinian prisoners who are currently languishing inside some 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers, including over 1,000 administrative detainees, and also those prisoners include women and children. And we've been hearing through the press and other social media rumors, I cannot confirm if they are fact, that Qatar is trying to interfere and help secure some prisoner exchange deal, at least to release women and children from Israeli prisons in exchange for some of the settlers that were captured by resistance fighters and brought into the Gaza Strip. Speaking of resistance fighters today, the Hamas military wing, the Qassam brigades, said that yesterday and today they managed to send more of their forces into the occupied territories east of the Gaza Strip to help their fighters who remain there, and also to continue their battle inside enemy territory.
All right, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Ashraf Shannon speaking to us there.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, all praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master Muhammad and his pure, immaculate, chosen progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I profoundly thank Almighty Allah for giving me the opportunity to attend this magnificent, comprehensive, meaningful meeting. I would like to extend my thanks to those who organize this event. Also, I would like to thank the brothers and sisters who presented various programs for an hour or so at the beginning of this meeting. The recitation of the Holy Quran was good. The anthems that were sung were excellent in terms of both the poetry and the music. The elegy was very good, and the speakers spoke about very good matters. Almost everything that is in our hearts and in our minds regarding the sacred defense and its leadership with the people were mentioned by these ladies and gentlemen. Nevertheless, there is a need to reflect on and to think about these matters in order to find solutions, God willing.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
What I would like to say is that the event of the Sacred Defense is a prominent, important period in our country's history. We should understand this period and this important event properly and introduce it to future generations. I strongly believe that if our succeeding generations learn about the important meaningful aspects of the sacred defense and realize how the Iranian nation was able to reach the heights of victory in this important event and to stand up there with power and pride, they will learn great lessons from it and they will achieve great things. This is my firm opinion. The greatness of this event must be recognized. Much has been done in this field. Books have been written, films have been made, and memoirs have been narrated. However, in my opinion, there is still much more room for work to be done. Up until now, we have not been able to recognize or make known the details of this great colorful painting. We are looking at it from a distance, but if we look at it closely, we will find that in every piece of it there is so much beauty, so many fine points, and so much meaning and depth that one is amazed. Each piece of it is like this, and this information must be made known to people.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Thank you.
rocket fire from Gaza. Palestinian fighters carrying out an unprecedented offensive with thousands of rockets. Sirens sounding across Israel, including Tel Aviv and outlets. Israel is being attacked ferociously. This was by far the biggest operation by resistance groups against Israel in decades. We decided to put an end to all the crimes of the occupation. Their time for rampaging without being held accountable is over. We announced Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, and we fired in the first strike of 20 minutes, more than 5,000 rockets. That was the announcement by the Ezzedine Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of the Hamas resistance group. Armed clashes along the separation fence with Israel near the southern town of Khan Yunis were reported to take place. Fighters seen here breaking through the fence. The mood, however, was different. The head of Hamas's political bureau is seen celebrating the operation, carried out not only by Hamas fighters, but by all the resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip. Such was the case at the Jenin refugee camp. Israel has declared a state of war alert, striking back, setting the stage for a new heavy war. Hamas fighters are seen inside an Israeli military camp, which shows the shock surprise of Israeli army. Here, Hamas fighters are seen with a captured Israeli military vehicle. This is a large operation including all Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank, namely Hamas, PFLP, the Ezzedine Al-Qassam Brigades, and the Islamic Jihad movements. In the occupied West Bank, the Lion's Den is also active. Israeli towns are on fire, like Rehovot in southern Israel, and Ashkelon seen burning after resistance rockets landed there. So dire the situation, Israelis were forced to hide in trash bins. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are looking for cover, while sounding defiant when it comes to Israeli regime forces. Israel is finding itself on shaky grounds. Even though it has mobilized reservists, there are shortages since reservists, along with pilots, have refused to take orders due to its so-called judicial reforms, which is why this announcement by Netanyahu may fall on deaf ears. Our enemy will pay a price, the type of which it has never known. That was a statement from Netanyahu. The surprise offensive that Palestinian fighters executed against the Israeli regime is a natural outcome of what Israel has done with Palestinians over the decades. Hezbollah summed it up best. This was a decisive response to Israel's continued occupation. However, Hezbollah also added this to its statement. This is a message to those seeking normalization with Israel. A clear reference to Saudi Arabia, which is said to be in talks with Israel for, quote, normalization. Ever since this extreme cabinet came into power, it has violated Palestinians on a daily basis. Not that previous Israeli officials did not do that, but this cabinet has done it at warp speed, which puts into question why Saudi Arabia would be interested in pursuing a, quote, normalization. Any normalization with Israel would be a stab in the back of Palestinians. Just the other day, Israel announced that it will legitimize the killing of Palestinian citizens in new open fire rules. It said the new measure seeks to allow officers to use live fire against Palestinian protesters. Al-Aqsa violations, Israeli incursions, injuring and killing Palestinians. All of this in the face of the silence by the international community. How much longer could Palestinians endure this?
The war drags on in Ukraine, signs are emerging that do not bode well for the U.S.-led coalition against Russia. Just days ago, the Slovak Social Democracy Party, which is a pro-Russia party, won the country's parliamentary elections. The leftist Smeristy Party, led by former Premier Robert Fico, has not secured enough votes to form a government and needs to form a coalition with other parties. But the victory has been interpreted as a sign of growing war fatigue in Europe. The party's leader has said that no more weapons would go to Ukraine. He has also questioned the logic of the EU's Russia sanctions and even accused NATO of causing the war.
I believe that on the one hand, yes, we should expect uncomfortable relationship between Brussels and Slovakia. But then on the other hand, I also think that the relationship will also be rather pragmatic. However, the danger is real when it comes to Slovakia's declining support to Ukraine. And this will also have its impact to weaken the EU's unity when it comes to its support for Ukraine.
Just weeks ago, Poland, a staunch ally of Ukraine, announced that it would no longer supply weapons to its neighbor amid a diplomatic dispute over Kiev's grain exports. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki has said that Poland's focus was instead on defending itself with more modern weapons. The country's president later tried to modify their stance, but the dispute is seen as a rift among members of the anti-Moscow alliance. Poland has supplied hundreds of Soviet-era tanks and 14 MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine and served as a major transit hub for weapons from other Western nations. These developments have stirred talk of a global shift in sentiment towards supporting Ukraine as the war grinds on, more than a year and a half after it began.
It is full of Ukrainians here. This is what I seriously do not like. They get benefits, energy costs went up, everything went up. So basically, they are getting benefits, and we, our citizens, we pay.
The money spent on the war in Ukraine has unnerved many citizens in European countries. Days ago, hundreds of people staged rallies in different German cities to vent their anger at Berlin's growing support for Ukraine. Many protesters carried banners and placards advocating for peace in Ukraine while expressing opposition to government policies, including the remilitarization of Germany. Demonstrators said Germany's decision to send more weaponry to Ukraine risks escalation of the conflict with Russia. Some protesters demanded that Germany pull out from the NATO alliance. Some said the United States is benefiting from Germany's intervention in the Russia-Ukraine war. Germany is among Western countries that have provided Ukraine with a wide range of weapons since the war erupted in February 2022.
I'm mainly concerned with crisis intervention and resolving this armed conflict on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, there are trends in the militarization of Germany. After all, from a purely political point of view, Germany is right in the middle, and America is shamelessly taking advantage of that too, using citizens through media policy to perhaps ultimately use them for their own goals, and Ukrainian citizens were also exploited.
The German economy has suffered due to crisis in Ukraine. It tipped into a recession at the start of the year and stagnated in the second quarter. High inflation, industrial slowdown, and reduction in global demand for manufactured goods have all been weighing on the German economy. And earlier in October, dozens of anti-war activists in New York City said that the interest of NATO depends on the perpetuation of imperial capital and extraction of wealth from the dispossessed.
Unification of peace forces in the United States, recognizing that it's the United States and NATO who are the to blame and the fundamental cause of the conflict in Ukraine, and that if we can force the U.S. government to stop sending money and weapons to Ukraine, the war will end the very next day.
A poll conducted in August said most Americans oppose Congress authorizing additional funding. Overall, 55% say the U.S. Congress should not authorize additional funding to support Ukraine versus 45% who say Congress should authorize such funding. And 51% say that the U.S. has already done enough to help Ukraine. The removal of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House of Representatives has added to the uncertainty around aid for Ukraine.
Kevin McCarthy has been ousted as Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives in a brutal, historic rebellion by far-right Republicans. The rebellious GOP lawmakers, furious at his cooperation with Democrats, have accused him of a string of broken promises. This is the first ouster of a Speaker in the House's 234-year history.
On this vote, the yeas are 216, the nays are 210. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table. The office of Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
I mean, it's a sign, I think, if history is any guide at all to this, it's a sign of a party in disintegration. I mean, that's what's happening. And it's melting down, and that's pretty clear. That's the older history. The more recent history, I think, is that what we're seeing today is the latest installment in the, you know, ever continuing coup d'etat by Donald Trump. I mean, that's what we're seeing.
The vote to oust McCarthy marks a major escalation in tensions for a House GOP conference that has been mired in infighting, and it comes just days after McCarthy successfully engineered a last-minute bipartisan effort to avert a government shutdown.
That I think probably the next step would be a shutdown, which is really what they're probably aiming for. They wanted to get McCarthy out of there in part because he stood in the way of that. Bunch of reasons, but that's part of it. And it's the politics of chaos.
The effort to oust the Speaker was led by GOP Republican Matt Gaetz. There is also a significant amount of distrust and anger from House Democrats towards McCarthy over his actions as Speaker and the House GOP agenda. The rebellious lawmakers accused McCarthy of a flip-flop, saying he had promised an end to hastily prepared stopgap legislation hammered out with the support of the opposition and a return to budgeting through the committee process. Some Republican leaders condemned McCarthy's removal, with former Vice President and current presidential candidate Mike Pence suggesting it would undermine the GOP in the eyes of voters. There is no clear successor to oversee the House Republican majority. Congress has just over 40 days to agree on a deal to avoid another potential government shutdown.
But there is a certain nihilistic quality to what they're doing. However, there is also, you know, genius in the madness, because the madness is about creating as much chaos as possible. And then, you know, then the Trump people will step in.
Speaker Kevin McCarthy's ouster could signal a shift in the U.S. House of Representatives on aid to Ukraine, with some of his possible successors staunchly opposed to assisting Kiev. Republic opponents of the aid view it as excessive spending and a misplaced U.S. policy priority.
I rise to put the leadership of the House, the Senate, and the President of the United States on notice. I will not consent to any expedited passage of any spending bill that provides any more American aid to Ukraine. It's as if no one has noticed that we have no extra money to send to Ukraine. Our deficit this year will exceed $1.5 trillion. Borrowing money from China to send it to Ukraine makes no sense. It's not as if we have some sort of rainy day fund sitting around, trillions of dollars in a pot of money, and we're just going to send that to Ukraine. We're going to borrow it. When we borrow it and create new money to pay for that borrowing, we create the inflation that is plaguing our economy.
McCarthy earlier this week denied accusations by Gaetz that he had cut a secret deal with Biden to allow the House to vote on Ukraine aid. McCarthy said then he wanted more information from the Biden administration. President Joe Biden asked Congress in July to approve another $24 billion related to Ukraine. Although the compromise struck in Congress dropped new fundings for Ukraine amid opposition from hardline Republicans, it remains unclear what might happen next. Biden and his Democratic Party say the U.S. has a duty to help Ukraine.
And why it's critically important for the United States and our allies that we keep our commitment. We can support Ukraine in the next tranche that we need, and there is another means by which we may be able to find funding for that, but I'm not going to get into that now.
However, the issue has become so politicized in Washington that the fate of vital military aid is now in jeopardy. The U.S. has approved 4 rounds of aid to Ukraine, totaling about $113 billion, with some of that money going towards replenishment of U.S. military equipment that was sent to the front lines.
Since the beginning of Russia's war in Ukraine, the American taxpayers provided Ukraine with $113 billion. Over the 583 days of war, between February 24, 2022 and the end of the month, that averages $6.8 billion per month, or $223 million per day. There's a lot of things that we need to fix in our country before we borrow money to try to perpetuate a war in another country.
There are also widespread concerns over corruption in Ukraine. The U.S. is increasingly urging Ukraine to do more to combat corruption. This is while Ukraine considers the direct budget support it gets from the U.S. and other foreign allies to be vital to keeping its economy afloat.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, cherished listeners of IRIB English Radio, through a transformative experience. I'm Zainab, your host on Islamic upbringing. Let's embark on a journey into the depths of raising children in line with Islamic values. Our experts' answers are rooted in the noble Quran and the teachings of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam will illuminate your path. So today in our studio we have with us our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you, and to all the listeners, inshallah, my salams to all of you.
So we have been talking about some of the very beautiful points, how to instill faith in your children. Brother Miqdad helped us with some of the very beautiful points. He said he'll be guiding us through 7 beautiful points. And so far, we have discussed 5 points. We said there should be a stable family life, number one. Number two, instill habits with patience and lenience. Number three, create strong Muslim identity. Number four, mosque centrality. Make your children active participants in the mosques. And number five, Brother Miqdad said, growing in knowledge. Create a thirst for knowledge in your children through different ways that we discussed in the previous episode. And also, make them habitual of reading books and, in fact, listening to books. Read out books for them. The connection with books should, in fact, be stronger than the connection they have with the mobile phones, the laptops, or other gadgets. So, Brother Miqdad, when we are talking about this fifth point, growing in knowledge, how does this further help in increasing the faith?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So when we talk about faith, we mentioned that faith is very much related to knowledge. And so the more we increase the knowledge in our children, the more the faith will become stronger. One of the very important things that we need to realize is that faith and strength in faith cannot be gained through blind imitation or just I am a Muslim and I believe just because my parents believed or just because I've been growing up doing these things without understanding. So that does not negate the fact that we need to be part of a Muslim community. We need to have the identity. We need our parents to form a culture as well as habits that are very much ingrained with our religion. But with all of that should definitely come knowledge as well.
Right.
Because strength in faith and growth in faith cannot happen overnight and cannot happen without this aspect of knowledge. See, children, if they don't understand why they believe and what they believe in, if they don't understand why do they do certain things, such as prayers, such as fasting, if they don't understand what is the purpose of, for example, Karbala and remembering Karbala, if they don't understand the different acts and the different things that are related to religion, then their faith will be weak. And then a little doubt or a little pressure, a peer pressure from outside will be enough to move them away from the religion.
Right.
So it is very important that when we talk about faith, we really work hard towards instilling a very strong understanding and realization in our children related to the religion.
Right. So, as you really mentioned, it's very, very important to make them understand what they are doing and why they are doing, because we do have many people around the world who are Muslims just because their parents are Muslims. We have many teens who don't know why they belong to a particular community, why, like, many even don't know why do they do Azadari, why, what is the concept of Karbala. So, you're saying that we as parents need to make enough efforts to make them help understand these things, give them enough knowledge to strengthen their faith. We'll talk more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Please, stop! I got a very game!
IRIB English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. We are with Brother Miqdad and we're discussing some of the very beautiful points that those were creating a strong and stable family life, instilling habits with patience, lenience and manners. Third, we said creating strong Muslim identity. Then we said mosque centrality, make them active participants in the behind the scenes of the mosque. And then we are talking about the fifth point, that is growing in knowledge. And Brother Miqdad said, create a thirst of knowledge in them. And you can do that through different ways. Read out books for them. And now Brother Miqdad is helping us with more knowledge.
So we talked about this this idea that faith requires a strong understanding, especially when it comes to when children are faced with questions or even doubts. Right? We live in a world where through social media and through technology, our children are facing a lot of different thoughts, different ideas, different ideologies, people who are questioning pretty much everything.
Right. Right.
From God, from the concept of good and evil, from different things related to the human being and the divine and normal life, general life as well. And so children will be faced with these questions, will be faced with these doubts. We need to make sure that they are equipped with the right knowledge to be able to counter these doubts. So firstly, that doesn't mean that we create doubts in our children, right? Yes, doubt is a good tool, and it's a good step towards better knowledge or increased knowledge. Questioning certain things allows us to strengthen our understanding. However, we don't purposely create doubts in children. So this is the first point. Whenever we talk about doubts, and as they say in Arabic, shubuhat, these things should not be created in children. However, it's important to allow children to ask questions, to sometimes even challenge certain things, to doubt certain things. It's also okay for children to be in contact or to have access to sometimes individuals or people who
do not belong to their faith.
Who don't belong to their faith, right? So to be able to open up their minds. However, this should be under control as well, right? Assuming the case that you, because what happens is that sometimes the wave of doubt and the wave of other thoughts will be so big that a child who is not equipped will just drown. And we've seen it time and time again in today's society. Children who start doubting everything or who start questioning everything and even lose their faith. Why? Because they came across somebody, they came across a mentor or a friend that was questioning a lot of things that put doubts in their mind, and they didn't have the ability to counter them. They didn't have the ability to, they weren't equipped with the tools to be able to answer these questions.
Right. So this in itself, this in itself shows the importance of how important it is to grow in knowledge in your children, to so that they can answer these doubts and so that they can, be strong and firm in their faith. Well, brother, we'll discuss more with you. We'd love to hear more from you after a short break. The listeners, stay tuned.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "He who recites the Quran before puberty has indeed been given wisdom in his childhood."
Welcome back, the esteemed audience of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing, and we are with Brother Miqdad. Brother Miqdad is helping us with some beautiful points to instill faith in our children. Brother Miqdad, you said growing in knowledge is very important. Children should be equipped with enough knowledge so that even if they face doubts, if they live in a society where they are facing non-Muslims, or they live in a world where they face questions, even through social media or some other platforms, so they should be equipped enough with the knowledge to answer these doubts, and so that which ultimately would strengthen their faith.
And so, as a family or within a within Islamic community, for example, we should never fear talking about taboo topics or challenging topics such as music, such as gender issues, such as drugs, all these things that children question or challenge that youth face, basically. We should discuss them, obviously, with their right approach, with the etiquettes that these topics demand. But children should feel, and youth should feel, that they are listened to and they are being equipped with the right answers to tackle these problems. And so when we do this, what happens is that not only just their knowledge is increasing, but their ability to understand and put things into perspective, these wrong behaviors, these wrong ideologies into perspective, into how they see the world and how they see the purpose in their life. And so this really plays a big role in their faith, in keeping up their iman and their relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So
topics such as the ones I mentioned, topics that are related to today's challenging topics that youth are talking about, that are sometimes we feel that they question our religion, we should come up with answers for them. We should allow them to discuss it, hear them out, and then really strongly show the real answers from Islam. And that allows this increase of knowledge, will allow them to then be able to feel comfortable being a Muslim, feel that they have enough skills, enough knowledge, enough awareness, and they are equipped to be able to tackle these challenges as well. And then they feel that we don't have a religion that doesn't have an answer. On the contrary, we have a religion that has a lot of answers for a lot of the today's problems. And that if we really abide by what Islam says, then we are looking towards this true human growth and this true human perfection at an individual level as well as a social level.
Right. And that really would play an important role in the child upbringing. When they are equipped with the right knowledge at the right time, that will... they would actually be equipped to face all the challenges and questions they are facing. And also, it's very important to teach our children that Islam is a complete way of life. It's not just teaching us about how to pray and how to give zakat and how to fast, but rather Islam answers all the ways of life, how to live, how to what to do, what not to do, how to behave. Everything has answers in the religion of Islam. Thank you so much, Brother McDowell, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In the past 8 years alone, the United Nations General Assembly has approved 140 resolutions criticising the Zionist entity. And the world's last apartheid regime was censured once again at the General Assembly last month. Latifa Abu Chakra has this report about the proceedings in New York and the unexpected twist in the tale that saw Israel's ambassador to the United Nations getting more than he bargained for.
The 78th session of the United Nations General Assembly opened on Tuesday, the 5th of September, 2023. The issue of Palestine featured in the opening events, perhaps more than usual. However, the only leader apart from the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, to explicitly raise the question of Palestine was Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, the president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In his speech, he discussed the occupation by the Zionist entity. Has the time not come, he said, to bring an end to 7.5 decades of the occupation of Palestinian lands, of the demolition of their homes, of the blood of their women and children, and for the people of Palestine to be recognized officially as a country with its rightful capital in Jerusalem. Raisi also referred to how the occupying regime in Jerusalem is seen as a perpetrator of much of the violence in the region. Fittingly enough, it was the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, who tried to interrupt the president's speech by walking into the hall holding up a picture of Mahsa Amini, who he later stated had been murdered by Iranian authorities. This is, as he well knows, a lie. Mahsa Amini was not murdered by anyone. Nevertheless, the performance had him escorted away and detained by UN security officials, an experience Israeli officials will have to get used to in upcoming years. Erdan stated that he protested to make it clear that Israel stands by the Iranian people. And he earlier posted a video of himself standing in a protest held by Iranian oppositionists in front of the UN headquarters. Erdan only succeeded in making it clear to the world that Israel is deeply involved in attempting to sabotage and subvert the Islamic Republic because it poses a real and credible threat to the Zionist occupation. The Prime Minister of the Zionist entity also addressed